Welcome back to Tea and Table, your favorite micro podcast, and I assume also the only micro podcast that you listen to. Anyway, this actually leads right into a confession I have to make. I did not realize that I can merge the words micro and podcast into an even cooler term, namely microcast. This is extremely obvious in hindsight, but my brother David had to point it out to me. So I'll be using that term from now on. In Tea and Table has now evolved and become a microcast. And with that, we can jump into the episode. This is part two of my little series on playtesting, or more precisely, the tips and advice I've collected around playtesting from other people who have generously shared their knowledge with the world in places like the internet. If you have not listened to the first part, that would make a lot of sense to do now, before you continue with this episode. The previous episode was episode number 13, and it was titled Playtesting Best Practices Everyone Agrees On. To give a little bit of context, by the way, I'm currently very busy playtesting Don't Fall, my 2D platformer jump and run game. You can hear more about it in episode 12, titled Don't Fall, a jump and run board game. Anyway, I will pitch Don't Fall to publishers at a convention in just a few weeks. At first, I thought I could prepare both that game and also my hacking game, but turns out preparing for a pitch is a lot of work, and I'd rather focus on one thing and do it properly. So needless to say, playtesting is top of mind for me currently, and as promised last time, let's chat about playtesting advice that is not entirely black and white, or that tends to differ a bit depending on the source, or where I simply see some nuance that is interesting to discuss. I initially wanted to break this little series up into two parts, but it'll actually end up being three parts, and I'll make the third and final episode next week. Starting out, a common piece of advice is to avoid making your prototypes look good or even pretty. In my opinion, this is generally spot on for the very first iteration you make of a game. To validate the idea and try it out very quickly, I try to spend as little time as possible, and there are actually two distinct very good reasons for that. The obvious one being that you will save time, of course. The other, less obvious reason is that you'll be less attached to your early prototype, both the idea itself and the materials. If you've invested a lot of time into making your prototype pretty, you're probably more hesitant to change things that need changing and to iterate fast, both because you've spent a lot of time making the prototype and don't like throwing that work away, and also because it might be a lot of work to create a new prototype of similar quality. However, I think once you've validated your idea and are ready to try it with other groups, or even to pitch it, I do believe it's worth investing time into making the game functional and removing basic frustrations, like for example bad handwriting on cards or having no player aid for complex games. And probably not too many people will disagree with this. When it comes to making the game a bit more pretty, however, I personally think there is some nuance and no one can be 100% objective about ignoring the visual representation of a game, even if they think they can. Also, using some placeholder art, or if you don't object to that, some AI art, might help convey your vision, especially if you already have a few ideas about the art direction. Second, some people recommend testing a very specific hypothesis, or perhaps multiple hypotheses, when you playtest your game. For example, a hypothesis I have for my current iteration of Don't Fall is that putting the type of action a card represents on the back of the card makes the game better and allows for more strategic decision-making. The game is cooperative, but you are not allowed to talk, so having some information about the actions that are available to other players is presumably helpful since I'm not aiming for a completely chaotic experience where players have very little control over the outcomes of the game. Other hypotheses could be about balancing certain mechanics in the game, the structure of the rulebook, or about a specific part of the structure causing or avoiding analysis paralysis in players, just to name a few very concrete examples. If you're at a very early stage in developing your game, your hypothesis could even be as simple as the game is not fundamentally broken, or the gameplay loop is fun. So generally, I think this is good advice, and it's useful to understand what questions you still have about your game in its current state at any point in time during development. However, some people have a more structured approach to creative work, like making a game, while other people prefer to work in a more intuitive and spontaneous way. To me personally, the structured approach is pretty appealing because I enjoy unnecessarily over-engineering things, but I totally see how it might not work for everyone. I probably could be doing this a little more currently. or at least try how that goes. So that's something I'll try to improve in the coming weeks as I playtest Don't Fall. My third and last point for this episode is what you should ask playtesters, whether you should have a questionnaire for them to fill out, and even whether to ask players any questions at all. Out of the 3 points we've gone over in this episode, I think this one has the largest variety in what different game designers prefer. On one extreme end, some even prefer to simply observe the gameplay and don't even ask any questions. To me, this seems risky if you're also trying to evaluate just how much fun people are having, which I don't think is always obvious from the look on their faces or their behavior. I still remember a 5-player game I played with my family where I was absolutely convinced no one really enjoyed it. One person kept checking their phone, another person looked annoyed, and everyone seemed to have a fairly mediocre time overall. But then, at the end of the game, my cousin proclaimed the game was amazing, and my brother asked about buying it, and everyone else confirmed they enjoyed the game, which came completely unexpected to me. Obviously, this is not always going to be the case, but still, since we played that game, I really try not to make assumptions about how people feel about a game and whether they enjoy the experience. Anyway, a less extreme take on this is that you shouldn't make your playtesters fill out questionnaires, so the writing should be on you. I understand the idea here, but a questionnaire has some advantages, of course. People can fill them out all at the same time, they don't as easily influence each other's opinions, and quieter people get an equal opportunity to record their thoughts. On the other hand, sure, it costs more time, and you're making people do stuff for you. As with so many things in both life and game design, the right solution probably depends. You could ask playtesters for their own preference, you could make it depend on where you are in the development process of your game, you could switch it up depending on location and player count, or even depending on your impression of the group that tested the game. Anyway, I personally have been asking questions and taking notes myself, which has been working fine so far. I do think it often makes sense to ask fairly concrete questions, rather than open questions like, "Did you enjoy the game?" And those will depend on your game and potentially on what you're trying to understand with the playtest. For example, I'm trying to design Don't Fall in a way that allows for memorable moments like when you play out a cool combo or when you realize you might be able to beat the level after all. So that's one thing I ask playtesters about. Similarly, I think framing is very important, especially when you're trying to lure out the honest and maybe critical feedback from people. It's always much easier to just say you liked the game than to give constructive feedback or say you actually didn't like the game. So instead of asking whether people liked the game, for example, you can ask what would be the top 3 aspects they would focus on improving if they had to make the game better. That gives them implicit permission to be critical, and you're not prompting people to simply say that they liked everything. Alright, as I mentioned earlier, I have 3 more points that I collected and want to cover, so stay tuned for the next episode, and until then, I hope you have a great week, and I'll talk to you next time.